Jeff Blair loves to commute. Let him join you on yours. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. He has traveled the world to bring you the story. Get it first, fast, and unfiltered. Now, this is The Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
I would say is I put this in like one of my top 10 songs of all time. Love this song. The other nine songs are by Yellow Man, Travis McKenzie says. No, that's not true. Nor are they by Afro Man. Although Afro Man would have at least two of them. It's definitely not Theory of a Dead Man. Oh, Marley would be probably six of the other nine would be Marley. Two of the other ones would be The Clash. One would be The Stones. That's about it. I'm trying to think. Well, Marley, one, two, three. Yeah, about that. So the Toronto Raptors play the Milwaukee Bucks tonight, and then they play the Cleveland Cavaliers tomorrow. And, you know, every season has a variety of challenges that get thrown in the face of a team. And it can be injuries, you know, it can be travel problems, just all sorts of stuff. One of the things a good team has to learn to do is not look past the night's opponent and look ahead. Obviously, the Cleveland Cavaliers, regardless of their record right now, the Cleveland Cavaliers are the team of LeBron James. They are the team that a lot of people think will eventually be the team that comes out of the East. I'm in the Chicago Bulls camp, but right now we can operate under the assumption that the Cavaliers are still in some people's mind the favorite team to come out of the Eastern Conference. But I got to tell you, of all the games in this homestand, the one that I have perhaps the most concern about is this game against the Milwaukee Bucks. And I felt this way for a couple of weeks for a couple of reasons. First of all, the Raptors and the Cavs, I mean, that's a team the Raptors are going to have to beat eventually. And LeBron James is a guy they're going to have to figure out. We know all that. But I'll tell you, the one thing the Bucks do, the Bucks play good defense. They've won two in a row on the road, which is not a reason for parade, but it'll be the first time in 2 years they win three in a row if they can win tonight. This is a test for the Raptors. Make no mistake about it. And don't overlook this team and look ahead to that game against Cleveland. Because I think the one thing we can say about the Raptors, they've been great in this homestand, but along the way, they have shown themselves to be a team that still has some flaws. So I look at this game tonight against the Bucks as the ultimate trap game. And that's going to be a challenge. It's going to be one of many challenges the Raptors are going to have to face this year. It's going to be one of the many challenges that good teams face. Because you know what? Bad teams don't have trap games. Good teams have trap games. Eric Smith is the Raptors play-by-play voice in Sportsnet 590 The Fan. He'll have the call of the game tomorrow in Cleveland when the Raptors play the Cavaliers. But the first order of business for the Raptors tonight is the Milwaukee Bucks. And Eric, I mean, I don't want to be overly dramatic here. I think most people would look at this and go, Raptors are favored. But this is a Bucks team that can throw some defense at you, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. I think Jason Kidd brought some of that with him from Brooklyn and from his playing days in that bizarre takeover this past summer with Kidd leaving Brooklyn and going to Milwaukee. And I think they already were one of those teams that kind of had a built-in defensive system in a sense because of the core of players that they have, and you know, most notably a guy like Larry Sanders in the middle, but then the length that they possess at a lot of different positions as well, which gives them a lot of versatility to guard you in different ways with different looks at multiple positions. So I think they're a tough team, and they're a team I think that, you know, you kind of have to watch out for going forward in terms of what they can do in future seasons as they build around that young core. So I'm sitting listening to you, Jeff, and I agree in terms of, you know, the potential for a trap game against the team that is likely better than what their record indicates, or at the very least, they're tougher and they fight you harder. Maybe they ultimately don't have enough to be a playoff team, to be a team yet that's going to get over the hump, but they're certainly one of those clubs that can make it tough on you and certainly battle you and not be an easy out.
Milwaukee beat the Brooklyn Nets 122-118 on Wednesday in triple OT. They've won three games in a row. They didn't win consecutive games at all last season, and the Bucks are going after their eighth win tonight. They're 7-5. They didn't get their eighth win last year until January 22nd. So this is, you're right. It's certainly a better team than the Bucks team that the Raptors saw last year. And as if that wasn't enough, Jabari Parker's coming off a season high 23 points, 8 of 13 shooting. Now, admittedly, you play triple overtime. The chances are pretty good if you're Jabari Parker that you're going to get your season high, but he's shooting 55% over his last seven games. He started the year at like 35%. What do we know about Jabari Parker?
I think the fact that he came out of college, and you know, this is maybe sacrilegious to talk about in Canada, but you know, I know we were discussing it last year into the springtime and heading up towards the draft, that a lot of people felt that if you're looking for that guy that's going to have an impact on your team as a scorer, as a pretty good defender, as a guy that's got some length, as an intelligent player, someone that's going to make an impact right away on your team, Jeff, mm-hmm. you go after Jabari Parker. I mean, yep. if you're looking for the potential and the potential superstar, then there's no denying Andrew Wiggins. And I'm not here to criticize Wiggins by any means, but the polished package of Jabari Parker was certainly better suited for making an impact right away in the NBA. And we're seeing it now with Milwaukee. And, you know, it probably turned out well for them. You know, we couldn't have predicted that they'd be 7-5 as you just went through how long it took them last year to win 8 games, to win 10 games, the disappointment that was last season. But had they been in a position to have Andrew Wiggins, I'm sure they would have taken it. But getting a guy like Parker ready to play, you know, coming from a ready-made product in college, and boom, plop him right into the NBA and have that type of role right off the bat, I think it was probably the best thing for this organization. They have enough youth. They have enough young players on the team. They started to need some young players that can play, start sprinkling the right kind of veterans in that system. And again, they're going to be kind of one of those irritating, nasty type of teams. And I think we're starting to see the fruits of that labor right now in the early stages of the season. So I think it's kind of a perfect fit, not only for the organization, having a guy that can, you know, play right away and have an impact, but also for the player himself. You know, I'm sure there must have been, he might never admit it, but must have been at some point a little, you know, thought that crept into his head about, man, going to Milwaukee and, you know, what kind of team are they? And they're coming off a tough year, and it's Milwaukee, and, you know, what's this going to be like? And all of a sudden now you're playing on a team that's starting to win a couple of games and starting to puff his chest out a little bit, starting to feel pretty good about themselves. And you're a part of that as opposed to languishing on a bad team that's losing every night. And great, you're getting your points and you're getting your minutes, but how much are you truly learning from that experience by just getting, you know, beaten down every single night, like, say, the Philadelphia 76ers? I think this has been a perfect transition for him, and the fact that he's been able to go to a young coach that's recently retired from the league as well, and Jason Kidd, and the ability to learn from him. I think there's a lot of things to like about Parker and his fit with that Bucks team.
Eric Smith joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. The Raptors will play the Milwaukee Bucks tonight. They've got the Cleveland Cavaliers tomorrow. Some numbers about the Toronto Raptors that I find particularly interesting in the fourth quarter. They are averaging an NBA best plus 5.4 points margin in the fourth quarter. They've allowed just 21.2 points per game in the final quarter. They've outscored all but two opponents. They're plus 53 in their last 5 games in terms of the fourth quarter. And the Bucks are minus 0.6 in the fourth quarter. What is it about this team and maybe Dwayne Casey's understanding of his team that has allowed the Raptors to be such a good fourth quarter team?
I wish I had a great answer for you. And in fact, I was listening the other day when you had Dwayne Casey on. I think you asked him a very similar question. And you even, I think, prefaced it with the fact that, coach, I don't want to jinx you, but you're also, you know, undefeated when taking that lead to the fourth quarter in your last 30-odd games or whatever. And if I'm not mistaken, the answer he gave you was something along the lines of just a team that doesn't quit and continuing to fight. And I would agree with that assessment. It's clearly the case. I mean, the numbers that you just spoke of, Jeff, you know, tell that story. This team, no matter whether they're up by one or two or down by 10 or 12, they continue to fight in that final frame. And I don't know what it is, though, exactly about why it takes until that final 12 minutes to see the best of the best. You know, we've seen hot starts, but they might peter out in the second or third quarter. We've seen slow starts that, you know, bit a little momentum late second and then into the second half and into the fourth quarter. But I don't know if we've seen yet, outside of maybe the one game, the huge, dominant, disgusting victory over the 76ers, I don't know if we've truly seen a full game from beginning to end. I suppose some people might say the Washington game as well, when you had those back-to-back wins for Washington and Philly. But it seems like it's been you know, an issue for this club for a couple of years now, and it's probably an issue for a lot of teams in the league, not being able to sustain it for a full 48 minutes. So I guess at the end of the day, if you're going to play your best 12 minutes, you might as well make it the last 12 minutes. And some of it as well might come down to the rotation of players, that when the Raptors have gone a little bit smaller late in ball games, they seem to have more success. And that's not anti-Valanciunas or anti-Terrence Ross, if it happens to be Vasquez on the floor with Kyle Lowry, with playing with a two-guard set. You know, I think we just have seen that when the Raptors have the ability to go a little bit smaller and spread the floor that much more, they might give up a little bit defensively. They certainly give up a lot in terms of rebounding, but they can become such a potent offensive team in terms of the way they're able to space things out. I think it becomes a matchup issue for a lot of clubs.
Eric Smith joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Now, the Raps do have Cleveland tomorrow. Cleveland's got a game tonight in Washington. The Cavs are 500. Boy, I mean, Washington and Toronto, that's a pretty tough back-to-back matchup. You throw, it's not a long flight, but you throw the fact that the Cavs are going to be traveling back. What are you expecting tomorrow from the Raptors? And I mean, I'll ask you about the Cavaliers. I think we all thought that there would, you know, it would take some time for Kevin Love and LeBron and Kyrie Irving to get used to playing with each other. And you know, you've got a coach coming in from Europe or from the Israeli league to kind of take control of things. What are you seeing from the Cavaliers that has surprised you? Because even though I think we all agreed there would be a period of kind of a wearing in or a period of trying to get used to each other, I don't know if we expected it to have the type of lows it's had so far.
Yeah, I agree. You know, we touched on it a little bit last night on the Hoop Show, and one of the points that I know Jonesy was making is, you know, for all the talk, and I've said the exact same thing, Jeff, about the transition that we all expected or anticipated for LeBron and Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving had to have to make. And we saw it in Miami when it took the big three a good 20-25 games to really figure things out. And then fast forward 6 months later, they were in the championship. And one of the points Jonesy was making yesterday on the Hoop Show was that the difference there is that you had, you know, a Chris Bosh who maybe didn't have a ton of postseason success, but he had been to the playoffs. He had tasted the postseason and knew what it took. You had Dwayne Wade with championship experience. He already had a ring on his finger. For right now, for the Cavs, Kevin Love's never been to the playoffs. Kyrie Irving's never been to the playoffs. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got the experience, no doubt, in the championship pedigree of LeBron James, but you've got a lot of inexperience on that team overall, and that might make the transition a little bit longer for that club to try and figure it out. And, you know, one of the things I've seen a couple times, and I know I said this in the summertime, and I've taken heat for it from some folks, whether it be on call-ins or Twitter or otherwise, that maybe I wasn't giving Kyrie Irving enough love. You know, he's coming off a Rookie of the Year. He's coming off a gold medal. He's a guy that's an all-star. He's got a decorated resume from top to bottom. You name it, he's done it all. But the one question I had was, is he the right guy, the right point guard for this team? Because he's a guy that likes to have the ball in his hands, and as much as he's a good distributor, he likes to shoot, he likes to make decisions, he likes to keep it himself as well. And you're going to have to be the right kind of guy to play alongside LeBron James, who likes the ball in his hands and is arguably a better decision maker and better passer than probably half the point guards in the league. So I think a lot will come down to him. You know, I think it's obvious to say LeBron James is going to get his and figure it out. And at the end of the day, it's up to you to figure out how to play with LeBron. I think Kevin Love is going to get his rebounds, get his offensive, putbacks off offensive glass. He's going to have the ability to stretch it out. He's going to find touches on the perimeter from other bigs that can't cover him. I think he'll be fine. But Kyrie Irving, how can you play within this system and still be effective as a scorer, but knowing that you're also there to distribute and to be the facilitator for a LeBron James, for a Kevin Love. And then the trickle down from there, a guy like Deion Waiters, I mean, he needs to keep his mouth shut and learn how to play, period. Mm-hmm. He's talking too much. But I think a lot of it comes down to Kyrie Irving specifically, and no matter what the resume to this point says, you're still under 22 years old. You had about 10 games of college experience. You've had a lot of success early on in your career, but now you're in the spotlight on the main stage, and you might have to alter your game a little bit to play with LeBron James.
Eric, it was good of you to join us. Thanks so much.
All right, Jeff. Thank you.
It's Eric Smith, Raptors radio play-by-play voice in Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Eric and Jonesy will have the call tomorrow night in Cleveland. Is it still the Quicken Loans Arena? I think so, something like that. As the, I don't know, these things always change. As the Raptors play the Cleveland Cavaliers tomorrow night. Tonight, the Raptors have the Milwaukee Bucks in town at 7:30 p.m. at the Air Canada Center. Raptors looking to close out the seven-game homestand. They are 7-1 at home right now, and they have turned the ACC into a fortress. Never mind the fact that they've also turned the ACC into, on the nights that they play, they've turned it into one of the real party places in this city. It really is a lot of fun to be a Raptors fan right now. And you know, and we've talked about this, and I don't want to rub salt in any wounds, but you know that Raptors fan is sitting out there right now, kind of smugly looking at Leaf fan and looking at everything he's gone through. And Raptor fan cannot believe what has happened in the city in the past 2 years. Everybody loves the Raptors. Everybody wants to be near them. The Leafs look more and more like a very unlikable collection of individuals and players. It's really remarkable the way this city has taken to the Raptors compared to the Leafs. The Leafs have been their own worst enemy. And it's not just the record. It's not just the record. I think it's just the whole scene around the Leafs right now that has really kind of tired people out a bit. And it's since I've been in this city, I don't think I've seen the situation like this where the Leafs literally can't do anything right, even when they win. You know, they create controversy. Whereas the Raptors, are like the, you know, the guy walking through Union Station finding a loony here, a toony here, a loony here, a toony here. Hey, look at this. It's like they're collecting good luck as they go along. And again, it's not to rub salt in any wounds. It's just it's the way it is. And it explains why I think so many people have kind of glommed onto this team. And I know a lot of people who are certainly not hardcore basketball fans. But they're watching the Raps. Went down to my local the other night. And people were talking about the Raptors. They were watching the game in the road. And I hadn't seen that before. Anyhow, Raptors and Cleveland Cavaliers tomorrow in Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Tonight, it is the Milwaukee Bucks in town. Interesting weekend of NFL football. I had three games with playoff implications. I wonder if last night's Kansas City loss, I think Oakland beating Kansas City last night probably has some playoff implications as well. I know the Miami Dolphins have got a great schedule ahead of them starting this weekend when they go to Denver. And I've got to think the Broncos will be just absolutely pissed off ahead of this game. It'd be like walking into a hornet's nest. Jory Mittelstadt is host of The Bottom Line on Sportsnet 590. The Fan. It is, of course, presented by BetTheGreek.net Sundays from 10 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. You can follow Jory on Twitter at Jory Middle, and Jory Mittelstadt joins the Jeff Blair Show. Jury, thank you for doing this. Before we look ahead to the weekend, last night's result, Oakland's win, that opens the door for a couple of teams, doesn't it?
Certainly does. If the season ended today, I believe Kansas City would still be in the postseason, but pending what happens this weekend, that could change, yes.
And, I mean, one of the teams that could take advantage of that, I suppose, is Miami, although, what are they, Miami is Denver 7.5-point favorites against the Dolphins. It's going to be a tough game for Miami. It really is, isn't it?
Yes, but the Broncos have some injury concerns. Emmanuel Sanders, Julius Thomas, Monte Ball, all key guys, right? Because Ball was hurt, came back last week, and Hillman, his replacement, got hurt, and he's out. So those three right now, their status is all unknown, and Emmanuel Sanders has been a tremendous weapon for Peyton Manning. Julius Thomas in the red zone is almost Gronk-like. He's leading the league at that position, and if not, memory serves, right at the top maybe of the entire league in touchdown receptions. And they were less than impressive last week at St. Louis. They put up a lot of yardage, Peyton did through the air, but they only scored 7 points. He had a couple turnovers. And the talk this week around the Broncos is that their offensive line is very vulnerable. And we think we saw a little bit of that in the New England game, mm-hmm. and a lot of that in the Ram game. I've been seeing various articles and commentaries that maybe their line is a little bit soft, and that may be the weakness on their offense. They were rolling along and everything was fine. Then the New England loss, and they've now lost 2 of 3, and they got a big favor from the Raiders last night, obviously, knocking off Kansas City, who they were tied with, but they did hold the tiebreaker, having beaten them early in the season with one game still to go in that matchup, which will almost surely decide the division. So, and the other thing is Miami's defense, what they do well is to get after the quarterback. They pressure the quarterback. So given the potential lack of weapons and the struggles with the offensive line, it might be a pretty good matchup for the Dolphins in this one.
Jory Mittelstadt joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. The Jets in Buffalo moved to Detroit because of that snowstorm. The Greek sportsbook has the Bills, I believe, as 2.5-point favorites. This is a hard game to call now, isn't it?
Yeah, I feel really bad for the Bills. I mean, they haven't been able to practice because they couldn't get to the facility because it was a travel ban. And I think they're hopeful to get out today to be able to get a couple of days of practice in. So they're at a serious disadvantage in not being able to be properly prepared. So they come off last week, right? They lose in Miami on a short week, and now they're essentially working on another short week because of the snowstorm. So it's really hard to get a handle on this one. You know, the Jets finally got a win after 8 straight losses. So they got to be feeling a little bit better about themselves. And I think they're coming off the bye. So the win was a couple weeks ago. So, yeah, this is a tough spot for the Bills. They lose a home game, and they tend to be a much better home team than on the road. Even though they've been better on the road this year, they're still, for whatever reason, things happen at the Ralph, and now they got to go play in Detroit. I'm kind of wondering why the game wasn't in Toronto at the Rogers Center. That might have made more sense, but I'm sure there are reasons. So they lose the home field advantage. They lose a lot of preparation time, and if you're a Bills fan, you have a right to be frightened in a game that, from all appearances heading in, would be one that you should win. I think there's a ton of question marks now, just given the circumstances.
Jory Mittelstadt joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. So Andy Dalton, we all thought that he'd exercise some of his demons. Now he goes home to play a team in Houston that he's 0-3 against, and two of which were pretty gruesome playoff losses. This is one of the more interesting matchups this weekend, isn't it?
It is. It's actually in Houston, and Houston's actually favored.
Sorry,
in this
yes.
game. Yeah, Houston's actually a small favorite in this game, which is interesting because you figure you know, quite often the lines are, as we know, the lines are put out there to try and get even action on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
But the lines makers are so aware that, in particular, the public gets caught up in what you most recently witnessed. And Cincinnati was awfully impressive winning at New Orleans last week, yet they're not getting much love from the odds makers being a 1.5 or a 2-point underdog in Houston. Having said that, I guess there's a little bit more bounce in the Texans' step, making the switch at quarterback from one Ryan to another, from Fitzpatrick to Mallett. Mallett played well in the win last week. I wouldn't say he was lights out, but the wide receivers seemed to get more engaged. And, you know, they had a really good game out of Alfred Blue at running back with Arian Foster out. And looks like Foster should return this week. So, yeah, this is one of the kind of interesting lines. There were about three games where I was looking at the line going, wow, those are really intriguing. This is one of them. The good news for Cincinnati, they're not in prime time, and it's not a playoff game.
Because right.
That seems to be the formula that undoes them. And you got to think they're going to be playing with a lot more confidence. A.J. Green's getting healthier. He's so important to that offense. And coming off a road win, I'm really interested to see what happens in this one. I don't really have a good feel, given that both are coming off good wins. And Houston making that change at quarterback looks to be a positive development for them because their defense has been pretty good all year. And Cincinnati looked like they were done and buried, and now they're back in first place in the division.
Yeah, it's remarkable. And Andy Dalton, he'll be going home to Katy High School in Houston.
Yes, his hometown.
Yeah,
right. Yes.
But still, his record against Houston is not doesn't inspire a great deal of confidence, but. You know, as you said, hey, it's
a week-to-week league, and this is one that I don't know if this will make my board. I don't really have a good feel for this one at all.
Jory, I appreciate you doing this today. Thanks so much.
My pleasure, Jeff. Anytime. Enjoy the weekend.
Thank you. Should be fun. It will be. Jory Mittelstadt is host of The Bottom Line. It's presented by BetTheGreek.net. Sundays, 10 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. It is a media. It's a great way to get yourself set for the NFL the weekend. Jory Middle is Jory Mittelstadt's Twitter handle, by the way. And again, that is The Bottom Line presented by BetTheGreek.net. Sundays from 10 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. They'll get you set for the NFL. I mean, the rest of the pregame shows, you're just going to have a bunch of ex-players sitting around talking about how complicated stuff is. I'd rather listen to guys talk about numbers and odds than how complicated stuff is. We've got a big weekend of footy. The international break is over. The premiership is back. Thank God. I can continue to make inroads in my fantasy league. My sights set squarely on Alex Sixero this weekend. Barclays Premier League, 9:30. Sportsnet Ontario, Saturday. Chelsea against West Bromwich Albion, 9:30 in Sportsnet 360. Leicester City against Sunderland, 9:30 in Sportsnet World. Newcastle United against QPR. And then on Sunday at 8 a.m. on Sportsnet World, Crystal Palace against Liverpool, 10:30 a.m. We'll have Hull City against Tottenham Hotspur. Craig Forrest is our Soccer Central analyst. We'll talk to Craig about the Premiership weekend ahead. Arsenal and Manchester United also playing, two teams with lots of defensive issues. Could be a ton of goals scored in that match. And we'll also talk to Craig a little bit about a pretty interesting weekend for the Canadian men's program. Draw against Panama and the under-20 men beating Russia, beating the U.S., and tying England. Craig Forrest will join the Jeff Blair Show right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Buffalo soldier, dread like a rider.
See, this would be like number one or number two in the list, top 10 list. This or jamming, depending on the mood. Jamming, not jamming. Redemption song's okay. The great thing about Redemption song is there's so many good covers of it as well. Joe Strummer and the Mescaleros cover of Redemption song is pretty cool. But this would be one or two, depending on the mood. Trenchtown Rock's pretty good too. We've got a big weekend of footy ahead for you as the Premiership gets back at it. The international break is over. We've got five games for you. Saturday, Chelsea, West Bromwich Albion, Leicester City, Sunderland, and Newcastle United against QPR. And then on Sunday, Hull City and Tottenham Hotspur, as well as Crystal Palace against Liverpool. Craig Forrest is our Soccer Central analyst, joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Good morning, Mr. Forrest.
Good morning.
Before we get to these games, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about this past week for the Canadian men's program. In particular, obviously, Canada playing Panama. But, Craig, I'm really, really interested in the results that our under-20 men delivered, tying England in Bournemouth, beating the Russians on penalties, and then beating the U.S. I mean, you followed this program an awful lot. And this under-20 team, first of all, they should be the core group forming the Olympic team. But beyond that, if we're looking not necessarily at this World Cup cycle, but the next one, there's some players in this under-20 team that are going to be shouldering the load down the road. What do you make of this under-20 team and the result they were able to get in those three matches?
Well, I thought the results were great. Some of the performances probably weren't exactly the same as the results themselves. Mm-hmm. They got, well played a couple of those games, but all in all, there's some individuals there that are as promising, and certainly moving forward, those type of games playing in the under-20s puts you in really good stead later on for your national team. I think it's important that you play all levels of your national team program to put you in that position when you move up a stage. You see the Argentinians do it, the Brazilians do it, the Spanish will do it, French will do it. The English don't do it in many stages. They don't play under-20 internationals that often. They play under-21s in Europe, but they don't take the under-20 World Cup very seriously. Mm-hmm. Countries that do take the under-20 World Cup very seriously, likes of Argentina and Brazil, for instance, Germany, do very well. And then also that does very well moving forward for the full national team, as we've seen as players come in and don't miss a beat. Islo for Spain, for instance, he's a player who's played under 16, he was 17, 18, all the way up through the Spanish system. He's only played a couple games for the full national team, but he slips in because they got a system and a culture that he's used to and didn't catch him off guard. So that's the same for these under 20 players for Canada. I think now for Benito Floro, the manager of Canada, now he's got a decision to make. There's plenty of players that played against Panama that won't be around for the World Cup cycle, or at least for the next World Cup anyway. Mm-hmm. So, what do you do with those players? You need some experience in there, but you should be moving the youth through because there's no point in playing, the likes of Julian de Guzman, for instance, who's unattached, who has done well for Canada over the years, but he's getting older. Tiba Hutchinson still has a little bit to do, play. He can still play a little bit. Di Rosario is another one. Patrice Bernier is another 30-year-old player, 30-plus. These players aren't going to be around, so he's got a decision to make to start, blooding in some new players, and is a good opportunity to do it as soon as they can. It's great for Canada playing every FIFA break. Canada's playing the international games. That's great, but we need to develop some of these young players, and it's time that we move them forward because they will be the future.
Yeah, and I think in a couple of instances, guys like Marco Bustos and Dylan Carrera, I mean, you do want to get these guys, you want to get them capped, you want to get them sort of in the fold, don't you? Because you've got to have that. We don't know how good these kids are going to be ultimately, but you've got to have that base, don't you? And you've got to get that base built up.
Yeah, you made a good point about getting them capped too, because some of these players have other choices and backgrounds that they could play for other countries. We've seen that happen with Canada before with Jonathan de Guzman. Asmir Begovic, the goalkeeper for Bosnia, played for under-20 Canadian team at the World Cup in 2007. But the only problem is with Canada is to cap these players, they have to play an official event, which is World Cup qualifying or for us, or Gold Cup. So the Gold Cup next summer is important to get as many players out there and give them the opportunity and cap them and tie them to Canada for the future.
Craig Forrest joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. All right, let's shift our focus to the Premiership. I guess the marquee match, if you want to call it that. I mean, I'll certainly be watching it as a Man U supporter. Arsenal, a Man U. Craig, I don't know. I don't know who's going to be. I don't know who's going to be playing for Man U in the back, along the back line. Arsenal also have their issues defensively. Is this a match where we can typically expect to see a lot of goals?
It sure looks like it, because both teams aren't defending well at all.
Healthy, they're not defending well.
Exactly. Now with all these injuries, I mean, Man United, you got a feel for him. I mean, Shaw is a fitness test. He has been training. Glinda's out. De Gea has been training. He's had a finger problem. Rojo's out. Raphael, Phil Jones, Falcao up front, he's out as well. But then you got Johnny Evans, who has a fitness test. So they got all sorts of issues for sure. And then you got the problem for Man United, Danny Welbeck, that they sold to Arsenal's in pretty good form, and probably now wishing they didn't sell him. And he's coming back, and Alexis Sanchez is in great form with 12 goals in his last 14 games for Arsenal. Then you have Wayne Rooney and Van Persie, who really like playing against Arsenal. Mm-hmm. Well, Van Persie's old club, he scored 5 of the last 6, and Rooney scored 10 historically against Arsenal. So it sure sets up for a high-scoring game, for sure. And both teams really desperately need points for different reasons. Arsenal, if they want to challenge for the title, which it looks beyond them now, and for Manchester United, top 4 would be their goal, and that's going to be a real stretch for them, too.
You know, one of the things we've seen this season, I think maybe one of the best storylines in the Premiership, is kind of this new group of strikers that have come up. Whether, and I'm not just talking about Diego Costa or Sanchez, but I mean Graziano Pelle. You've got Sacco, Ayoze Perez scoring for Newcastle. And it's funny because last year we saw so many strikers come in that didn't do anything. I mean, whether it was Andreas Cornelius or Ricky Van Wolfsfinkel or Kostas Mitroglou, it really does seem, doesn't it, Craig, that we're getting that we're getting a new crop of really impactful offensive players in the Premiership, which is good. It'd be nice if some of them, frankly, were English. But we do, it's been a while since we've seen this kind of a group, isn't it?
Yeah, it seems to be. And even some young kids like Sato Berahino at West Bromwich Albion, 7 goals for that club. He's got more than, I think, the combined total of the rest of the team. So some nice surprises as well. I mean, last year when you look at a guy like Van Wolfsfinkel, for instance, coming from the Portuguese league, filling the net, changing leagues doesn't always work. And it certainly doesn't work quickly. You have to adjust to it. And we've seen that happen. Although, this year, teams seem to be picking up players like Southampton with Pelle. I think he's been absolutely fantastic. He's a late developer, and they saw some worth in him and scouted very well, and they got off to a very good start. So there's been some great attacking players. You're absolutely right, and that's good to see. And I don't think there's going to be any changes, but the league is difficult to play in, and you can score lots of goals in the Eredivisie in Holland or in Portugal or other leagues for that matter, and come to the Premier League and struggle. And we've seen that happen an awful lot, too. But this year has been a great, great year for strikers. And Diego Costa coming to Chelsea hasn't missed a beat from leaving Atletico Madrid last year after nearly winning the Champions League and actually winning La Liga. So Chelsea are in good stead, aren't they, with their strikers at the moment. As long as Diego Costa stays fit, I think this, you know, it's going to be a difficult task for anybody to catch Chelsea. They've only dropped 4 points from possible 33 total with 29 points. So I don't see how anybody at this present moment can catch them unless they get into an injury crisis like some of these other clubs have had.
And speaking of tough transitions to the Premiership, one of the matches we'll have on Saturday, 9:30 on Sportsnet 360, Leicester City and Sunderland. And Leicester City, I think a lot of people, they got off to that really intriguing start, and I think a lot of people started looking this at one of Leicester City as maybe one of those small teams that could really come through. Kasper Schmeichel's a great keeper. They have a very stout defense, but I mean, they just stopped scoring. And I think, Craig, this is an example again, isn't it, of just what a big step forward it is to go from the championship to the premiership.
Yeah, I mean, I've done that, especially in the inaugural year of the Premier League in 1992. We were promoted into the Premier League, and we got off to a really good start because you're just buzzing, and, you know, you just enjoying the moment so much. But it's also very taxing emotionally. You're up and down. And if you don't get off to a good start, you find that it's going to be a tough, long season. We did get off to a really good start, and we later on fizzled out and picked up some injuries, and we just hung on in the Premier League. But early on, after the first few months, we were actually in the top three in the league. So I can understand what's happening with Leicester, and it's a good thing that they did get off to a decent start, but they're always going to be goal challenged, a club like that, and they're going to scrap and see if they can stay in the Premier League. And then if you can, then you can strengthen slowly as it goes on. But teams don't want to throw themselves in a massive amount of debt either, because it's so much different than North American sports, where you have the relegation system and you lose tens of millions of dollars by being relegated. And that can really cripple a club down the line. There is a parachute payment as you get relegated, but still, we've seen it happen before with clubs that have spent a lot of money, put themselves in a difficult position financially, and have fallen. Leeds United is a good example of that. Ipswich Town, a few years ago, when they're in the Premier League, they finished in the top five. They locked down all these players on long-term contracts, figured they'll be in the Premier League for years to come, relegated the next year, and they nearly went into liquidation. So it's a difficult situation for the teams like Leicester, because they don't want to bust the bank, but they want to be competitive, and they obviously want to stay in the Premier League, but it's very, very difficult.
Craig, we'll look forward to your work tomorrow morning. Got to scoot. Take care.
Thanks a lot.
Craig Forrest of Soccer Central. That's it for the Blair Show. Hockey Central at noon is next. Cox, Millard, Friedman, Jim Nill, Andrew Cogliano joining the boys. Don't forget Joey Vendetta sitting in for Tim and Sid today. Have a great weekend, everybody.